Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram as well. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend from the Columbus Dispatch. He covers the Blue Jackets, Aaron Portsline. Aaron, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Good afternoon to you.
Aaron obviously brought you on. We've been talking last segment about Ryan Johansson and the healthy scratch decision from earlier in the week. He'll be back in the lineup tonight as the Blue Jackets get back in action, you know, against the Arizona Coyotes. Ramifications from that scratch? Is it going to be a one-game sort of situation and now it's done with, or are there going to be ramifications felt going forward for a couple weeks, a couple months, and further straining the relationship between Blue Jackets and Ryan Johansson?
You know, I don't know. That's part of the fun of all this, I guess, if you want to call this fun. You know, I think there's a lot of noise around this one right now, and I get it. There's a lot of people who think that it's Tortorella being Tortorella. But I think I would suggest that those people have probably not been watching Blue Jackets games too closely, or maybe they're just looking at the points column next to names. This was not unjustified. And I think Ryan Johansson, without saying it so succinctly, pretty much said as much in his own words that it's been coming for a while. I mean, he knows he's been making mistakes. He's committed, you know, turnovers. He's played basically in defiance of the game plan, if you will. So he knew it was coming. I don't think it's a bad relationship between Tortorella and Johansson. I don't think it's a comfortable one yet. Like, I think the coach is still trying to see what the player has. I think the player is trying to see just where this coach is at. But I don't think Ryan Johansson's been scratched before. He's been scratched in the minor leagues before. He was scratched in junior a lot. This is not new to him, and that's part of the issue with him. But I think he's going to play a hell of a game tonight. I can't say this is never going to be an issue again, or that it's going to be, you know, roses and butterflies, as Johansson likes to say. But I don't think it's a sign that the end is near at all.
Aaron, there are a lot of people that seem to think, though, that this is a foregone conclusion that the Columbus Blue Jackets are going to trade Ryan Johansson. And based on, you know, his play early this season and him being a healthy scratch last game, what do you think the likelihood of him being traded is? And if the Columbus Blue Jackets do decide that they want to trade Ryan Johansson, what are they going to be asking for in return?
Yeah, well, I'm among those who think it's a possibility, certainly, but I'm not in the group that thinks it's going to happen for sure. You know, one phone call can change anything. Obviously, right now, the names that have been offered up have not blown the Blue Jackets' way. I look at it this way. I don't know if this is exactly how the Blue Jackets management sees it, but I think it is. Are they going to make a trade right now involving Ryan Johansson that's going to put them into the playoffs this year? That's going to make them a better team this year and in the future? I don't think that's likely. I think you're trading at the lowest point of your commodity. I would suggest that they're going to give this time. Tortorella was hired for this kind of job. Let's see what Tortorella does with this player. See what heights Ryan Johansson can get back to. He was the MVP of the All-Star game last year. If he gets back to that and you decide that this, like, Boston did with Joe Thornton 10 years ago, you can't win with this guy, then you make a move. And then you're getting a return that's far greater than you would be right now. He's healthy scratched. He's been benched. Fair to middling points. You know, there's been talk about heart issues over the summer and how that affected his training. This is not the time, in my opinion, to be trading Ryan Johansson. And to your second point, if they do decide to move him, you would have to think a big-time defenseman's coming back, because that's the soft spot on the roster. That's the part of the roster they absolutely have to address at some point.
Aaron, you know, is putting him on the wing for a period of time? Are all these things trying to send messages? And you mentioned in one of your previous answers that, you know, he's been benched in the AHL, in junior, At what point is, you know, he is what he is, and you have to deal with it that way?
Sure, and that's very valid. They keep saying he's 23 years old, he's a young player, and that's true. He's played over 300 games in the NHL. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, you know what you've got. Now, players can change, players can get better. For me, he's a lot like Joe Thornton, just the person. He's not had a 100-point game. I'm cautioning myself. He's not an NHL Hall of Famer. But there's the personality of a laid-back guy. Joe Thornton is pretty much the best player on any team that he's on. But any team he's on has to be driven from a different point on the roster. And that's a difficult thing, to have the best player on your team not be the driver of things. Maybe that's what you have in Ryan Johansson. I don't pretend to know him as anything more than a professional relationship, but I think I probably know him better than most around the NHL. This is not a bad kid. This isn't a kid that doesn't care. But the Jonathan Taves-like self-motivation, the Sidney Crosby early in his career, almost obsession with winning, obsession with perfection, that's not part of his build-up, his makeup. That needs to be instilled and pushed from somewhere else. And if it's not coming from the coach, in this case Tortorella, it's got to come from veteran players on the roster, and I'm not sure that it is.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, discussing Ryan Johansson and the Blue Jackets. Aaron, you've mentioned him a couple times in your answers, and that's John Tortorella. When he was hired as head coach after replacing Todd Richards earlier in the year, sort of an eyebrow was raised around the NHL. People weren't necessarily sure Tortorella was going to get another job after the disaster in Vancouver. How has he been behind the bench for the Blue Jackets? How would you evaluate his performance thus far as the Blue Jackets head coach?
Well, their performance on the ice has been spotty. I think they're a 500 club exactly. But you have to say, when he took over, they were 0-7.
Sure.
And it was a hopeless situation. None of those first seven losses were even one-goal losses. Like, they weren't even in those games. Just blown out of the building. And you know, that has changed. They're now in almost every game. They're competitive in almost every game. That's a big difference. The play in their own zone's been better now. This is a rough patch for them. Bobrovsky's out. Savard is out. They're starting to feel it now. They're starting to get some big injuries again. But he's restored a level of competency, competitiveness. That's all there. Here's the thing, too. Like, I get the sense from around the league, maybe I'm just reading too much on Twitter, that Columbus didn't know what it was getting with Tortorella. They knew exactly what they were getting. And John Davidson knows Tortorella as well as anybody in the league, worked with him before in New York. This is the kind of guy that they felt like they needed for their team. This is not a self-motivated bunch. Maybe Ryan Johansson is the embodiment of the team. Not a self-motivated bunch. They needed a swift kick in the backside, and that's what John Tortorella is. Accountability, he has his own brand of it. It's a little more stiff than a lot of other guys in the league right now, but he's unwavering. He is a legitimate winning coach. Vancouver did not go well. I would suggest that Tampa Bay went wonderfully. I would suggest that his experience in New York was, on the whole, an experience that most coaches would love to have. They did not win a cup, but he brought a level of stability to that franchise for sure that I think they're still playing with a lot of John Tortorella in their game in New York. I think the players would say that. Many of them have. This is what they wanted. This is what they felt they needed. See how long it lasts, because, you know, he is one of those coaches. There's a little Ken Hitchcock there where, you know, at first it works and the first guys are receptive. He can be abrasive. He can be hard to be around for long term. But this is the guy that they felt was the right guy to turn this thing around.
You know, Aaron, you just mentioned Twitter a few seconds ago, and by the way, follow A. Portsline for all of your Columbus Blue Jackets news, but you just tweeted this out this morning that David Savard's been placed on an injured reserve. He'll be out 4 weeks with an ankle injury, and he, of course, signed that big five-year contract extension back in September. I guess it's safe to say that it's been a bit of a disappointing start to the season for David Savard.
Yeah, I mean, that's everybody, really. I mean, especially on the blue line. It was, I think we talked last time, I've never seen anything like, I really haven't, in all of the teams, even the early teams here in Columbus, when you're just patchworking rosters together as an expansion team. Never seen a team play as, it wasn't even poor, it was cluelessness in their own zone. They looked like imposters. They looked like they'd never played the game before. It's just the most curious, just unfathomable play with the puck in their own zone. Abysmal. And Sergei Bobrovsky was bad too. It all worked together. After that, I think Savard's been fine. You know, he's not blessed with. He doesn't move like Drew Doughty. He doesn't have those wheels, but he's got hands. He's got vision. There's a lot to like about the player. He's paired with Jack Johnson. Not an easy thing sometimes. And they play against the opponent's best players literally every night, every shift. They push 25 plus minutes. On the whole, I think Savard's been fine. I think he's going to continue to get better. They better hope he does, but he's not been on the list of Blue Jackets problems. He is way, way, way down the line.
Aaron, last question. I'll try and end it on a positive note here. There are some positives in Columbus. And to me, coming through town, a couple of young players played pretty solid hockey, and it seems like gaining the trust of John Tortorella, especially Alex Wennberg. How have you seen his game develop? And also Boone Jenner seems to be, you know, really taking an active role and developing as a real good hockey player.
Yeah, and Boone Jenner's the sort of the guy that you figured would be great under Tortorella. At least I did. That seemed like, you know, hard work is natural to him. Farm boy. That's what he grew up doing. Wenberg's interesting. I think the part of Wenberg's game that you've seen really elevate this year is his playmaking ability. Had a three-assist goal, a 3.9, I'm sorry, the other night in Phoenix. Hell, everybody did, though. But he was pretty good. The playmaking's there. Still needs a little more physical presence. Gets pushed off the puck pretty easily. He survives right now. He's a slight player. He survives by his anticipation, his leverage. He's a really smart player, almost always on the right side of the puck. Struggles in the faceoff dot. I'm a little surprised that Tortorella loves him as much as he does, because he's not a fiercely competitive type kid. But there's a lot of nuance to his game. You see him long over to long term, you appreciate him more. They need him to get bigger, stronger, better. But there's a lot to like about his game. Jenner is who Jenner is, and this is a contract year for him. So that, you know, this is good for him. Hurt last year, played 31 games all of last year. He's obviously already passed that this year, and they missed him when he was gone. He's a big part of their team. Really competitive, really successful, hard worker along the wall, especially below the net.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. He's a frequent guest on this program. Aaron, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon to discuss the Blue Jackets.
Follow him on Twitter, too. Follow A. Portsline.
Yeah, thanks, boys.
Thanks,
happy
Aaron.
Happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah, yep. Happy holidays to you, too. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss trash-talking and the line that you would think somebody wouldn't and couldn't cross. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. Patrick O'Sullivan recently wrote a tremendous first-person article on the Players Tribune detailing the abuse he suffered at the hands of his father while growing up in minor hockey and in junior hockey and in the NHL. It's a harrowing piece. We recommend that you read it if you haven't yet. We sort of criticize the Players Tribune for sometimes not being all it's cracked up to be, but this was a good article from that website. In the course of answering questions on Twitter about the article and about the abuse he suffered as a child, he mentioned that Alex Burrows of the Vancouver Canucks engaged in some reprehensible trash talk regarding that incident and that tragic moment in Patrick O'Sullivan's life. Here's some audio, and we'll talk about the place of trash talking in the NHL and stepping over the lines.
Well, it kind of just came up on Twitter. I was asked if I thought that fighting had a place in the game or if it should be banned. And I said that I thought it belonged, especially the spontaneous fights. And I said, if a guy like Burrows wants to hit someone from behind, he needs to answer to that. And then I followed up with the comments about what he said to me. So, you know, it wasn't really something I had planned on doing, or, you know, it just kind of came up. And clearly we saw what happened as far as the reaction to that.
Here's the direct quote from Alex Burrows, pardon me, from Patrick O'Sullivan about Alex Burrows and what he said. Quote, Burrows was the only guy who said he wanted to hurt me like my father did. That's why I can't stand him. I understand trash talking takes place in sports. All the sports. I get it. You can't be a human being and say this kind of thing to another person. It's astounding to me that somebody could utter those words. I mean, Alex Burrows is certainly a guy who plays on the edge. He's certainly a guy who's dirty. But, I mean, these comments are inhumane.
Well, they are, and you know, this is one of the reasons. I mean, we got to know. I'm surprised that this was a comment that was made, even though you know that Alex Burrows is known for being pretty chirpy and a guy who will cross the line often. But with what he says and with his actions on the ice, this is kind of this is crossing the line by miles, as far as I'm concerned. So it's just, he's classless, and I don't think anybody in the league is sad to see him struggling, and while his career seems to be fading away. This is, to be honest, if you want to go back to the Boston-Vancouver series for a second, this is a prime example of why, one of the reasons to me why Boston beats Vancouver. Because Vancouver generates their arrogance and their approach to the game generates such hate and animosity from the other side that it serves as a motivator.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly
teams.
What I'm talking about.
Right.
And guys like this, they serve, they motivate the other team with comments like that. And Burrows, I mean, I don't know how the guy shows his face now. I really don't.
Well, the worst part is, and Ezio, I'll let you get in here in a second, you know, Burrows, you know, owned up to the remarks. You know, he was confronted
He has no choice now.
I know he had no choice. He was confronted with the remarks, and the only thing you have to say, the only thing you can say is, I'm sorry, they're reprehensible. That's the only comment you that's your apology. Instead, here's Alex Burrows' apology. I apologize if I offended him back then. As if, you know, O'Sullivan is being too sensitive about the comments. I did say some stuff that may now, looking back, I could see how it would have offended him. Like a lot of things I said back in the day. I read his story on the Players Tribune. It's tough to see. At the time, I believed in whatever...
It's tough to see. Well, you knew, but everybody knew the stuff with his dad. That's why you said the comment, you idiot.
Never mind that. He's blaming it on youth. He's blaming it on being a young player doing everything to stay in the league. Meanwhile, it was only earlier this year, in November, which last I checked was, you know, 6 weeks ago, he was accused of Jordan Tutu of saying reprehensible comments about Jordan Tutu's brother who passed away. I mean, Alex Burrows is just a scumbag.
Well, as far as the comments...
I haven't heard Drew this fired up in a long time.
Well, you can't say things about...
Hey, Drew, that doesn't... I know. Saying, I haven't heard you fire up in this long time. I just heard my comments on it. Has he?
I mean, they're reprehensible. I mean, what else can you say? I mean, you can't say that. I mean, to make fun of someone who suffered abuse at the hands of their father and to make fun of that is quite frankly despicable. And there's no excuse for it. I mean, he can apologize all he wants, but I don't think that makes up for it. And look, we know that Alex Burrows has a bad reputation around the NHL for what he does on the ice and for what he says on the ice. So this shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. Richie mentioned the 2011 playoffs. I mean, he's known as one of the worst trash talkers in the NHL. And the apology to me doesn't mean anything. And, you know, as far as the article goes, I thought it was an extremely... emotional, and if you haven't read the article, maybe we'll link the Players Tribune article, because it must have been very hard for Patrick O'Sullivan to write that and talk about, you know, especially after he had been estranged from his father and his father still came to watch him when he played his first NHL game. And I mean, you're basically putting your entire life out into the public there. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think I like to see that type of stuff, because at the end of the day, hockey players whether they're stars or Patrick O'Sullivan was a guy who struggled a little bit and was kind of a journeyman in the NHL. But regardless of that, these guys are still human beings, right? So yeah. I think it's important, and you know, hopefully there's a hockey player out there who maybe had a similar experience as Patrick O'Sullivan, and he reads that, and Patrick O'Sullivan, really helps him maybe get through some tough times.
You know, so there's a talk about the code about trash talk. Here's Wayne Simmonds. He played a year with Patrick O'Sullivan in 2008-2009.
In L.A.
Yeah. In L.A., right. Quote, "To even hear of something of the sort is extremely offside," said Flyers forward Wayne Simmonds. "If that happened when I played with Sully, with Patrick O'Sullivan, and he came and told me that, I'd fight Burrows immediately. No questions asked, no ifs, ands, or buts. I think that's classless."
And he faced his own racist stuff. Remember, I think it was in Boston when Philadelphia was playing there.
Sure, and didn't in an exhibition in an exhibition game in Southern Ontario, I think
that's
there was
right,
an incident
yeah.
as
maybe
well.
Maybe it wasn't Boston, maybe it was that, anyhow.
Yeah. yeah. Simmonds continued, "I think personal issues such as that, cross the line regarding trash talk. I think if someone has a family problem or something, that's off limits. For me, anyway. I try to definitely stay away from that 100%. And I'm definitely not a guy to be quiet on the ice. But my chirps are more things I can't say in an interview. Swear words or I'm going to hurt you. Stuff like that. I don't think I would ever go as far as to say something like that about someone's past." I mean, I think that's pretty, I think Wayne Simmonds sort of sums up trash talking pretty well there. It's a part of the game. It's never going to go away in its entirety. Not that it necessarily should either, but most players, do consider themselves to some degree to be a part of a fraternity, and you wouldn't ever cross the line that Alex Burrows not only crosses, but it seems like he takes pleasure in going after people and their most emotional, most, sensitive issues.
Yeah, and Alex Burrows was, discovered and, was kind of a good story because he's had a good NHL career coming up through the ECHL and the AHL with the Manitoba Moose. So, he's had a good career. But if you say stuff like that, not only did he cross the line, he stomped all over it. I mean, you can't say stuff like that. I mean, there's a difference, Drew, between trash talking and really picking on someone's personal tragedies. I mean, it's a personal tragedy. So if you're going to go after that, I mean, you're going to put yourself open to a lot of criticism. And quite frankly, players aren't going to respect other players who say things like this. And you're right. And I mean, sure, Alex Burrows apologized. But really, at this point, in his hockey career, has he changed? Is he going to change?
No.
That's open. You're right, Izzy.
Do you think he really feels remorse? I don't believe he feels remorse. I think he truly believes that he did what is necessary for himself to have carved out, the 10-year career he's carved out in with the Vancouver Canucks. I think he thinks, sure, I might be hated in every dressing room, but I don't care. I've made millions of dollars. I've provided for my family. I just don't know how you look at yourself in the mirror. And there's things you can say without talking about a guy whose brother committed suicide or whose father beat the crap out of him. It's just, those words just don't leave your lips normally. If you're a normal human being, they just don't come out. That's my perspective on it. I mean, Alex Burrows, when his career is over, and like you said, Richard, it's quickly winding down. I don't think anybody's going to shed a tear or pay any respects to the way he's conducted himself in the NHL over the past decade. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Michael Trakos. He did a great four-part series about the cost of hockey and the specialization of youth hockey. We'll talk to him next. You're listening to Illegal Curve. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome to the third and final hour of this Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the National Post. He's the senior hockey writer for Post Media. It's Michael Trakos. Michael, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks always for having me on.
Our pleasure, Michael.
Love to be on your show.
Yes, we always appreciate you making time for us. And you did a fantastic four-piece article about the cost of youth in hockey. But we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about Jonathan Bernier's AHL save percentage. 20 minutes on Jonathan Bernier. You ready, Michael?
Let's do it.
Obviously kidding around here because God help our audience if we spent any more time talking about that, or any time talking about that, rather. But a fantastic four-piece article on the cost of youth hockey and the specialization of youth hockey. You know, at the end of it all, Michael, after you wrote all the articles, you did all the research, you did all the stories, so what was your one takeaway after writing the four different articles and really delving deep into this area?
Hockey is evil. You know, it's funny, though. Thanks for having me on to talk about this, because I think it is a series that I think a lot of families, hockey families, should definitely read. And I think even if you're not involved in hockey, I think this is the kind of thing that, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, I think it kind of translates, even gymnastics and dance and whatnot. I think there's a lot of similarities. But, yeah, it's funny. The overwhelming response, it's really touched the nerve, I think, across the country, because I'm getting a lot of emails, a lot of people on Twitter responding, reaching out, and I've done a lot of radio talking about the stories. And I think it's one of those things where people are a little PO'd at just kind of how expensive the game has become, how specialized it's become, and how hockey's really become one of those elite niche sports for wealthy families. And they're all PO'd about that, and yet they love the sport so much that they're just kind of also willing to go into debt and just going, shrugging their shoulders, going, okay, yeah, it really does suck, but my kid's got to play hockey, and my kid's got to go into AAA, and my kid's got to go to a hockey academy and play summer hockey, and you know, find a skills coach and find a personal trainer. So it's kind of one of those things where people are angry, and yet they're also saying, well, throw up my arms because I don't see an alternative here, and I don't even see an alternative, to be honest.
Now, Michael, you mentioned the financial cost of playing hockey nowadays, and I echo what Drew said. These articles were fantastic, and you deserve all the praise that, mm-hmm. that you're getting. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure if it was the second part or the third part, but there was a little bit of a part where you talked about the participation in Canada for minor hockey specifically, and how even though the average price for a hockey parent right now is $3,000 a year at certain levels of minor hockey, and then it goes up to $10,000 to $15,000 for parents whose child are playing AAA hockey, and then you get into these hockey academies and you're talking about $50,000 plus. Yet Hockey Canada is saying that registration actually isn't down. So I guess the question becomes, are hockey parents completely irrational and out of their minds, or do hockey parents in Canada still believe that even if they don't get their kid to the NHL, this money is well spent?
Yeah, and I think it's the latter. I really do, because I'm getting a lot of emails from parents saying, you know what, my kid's probably not going to make the NHL, but his friends are playing hockey, and I played hockey, and of course we want him to play hockey. And like you mentioned, it's, the costs are just astronomical. It's insane. Like, when you consider $50,000 for an academy, and you're going, well, okay, I know the prep school families. They're all captains of industry. They're doctors or lawyers. That's not true. I talked to a lot of families of kids that are at these schools, and out west at schools like Okanagan Hockey Academy, the Edge School, where a lot of NHLers like Joel Coborn, Curtis Lazar went to, half the world junior team went to a hockey academy. And you know what? Not all these guys are coming from well-off families. A lot of them, some of them are. Some of them, like I talked to, are going into debt, willingly going into debt, to give their kid every advantage, to make sure their kid grows up with a quote-unquote prototypical Canadian kind of experience of, you know what, you're playing hockey, and maybe 20, 30 years ago, growing up Canadian meant you're going on the ponds in the wintertime. Well, that does not exactly exist anymore. A lot of kids, if you're living in Toronto, there's not a whole lot of ponds in Toronto. What it actually means is you're paying a lot of money for ice because ice is expensive, and you're paying a lot of money for specialized coaches because that's what your peers are doing.
Michael, what about, you know, I mean, the costs that you outline are just so exorbitant, and the point that they're, you know, after-tax dollars, you're looking at, and the median income within $20,000. The after-tax dollars of some of these academies is about $40,000 to $50,000, and the median income in Canada is $76,000. I mean, I can't even wrap my head around those numbers. How do they sell this? I mean, I guess I want to get into the aspect of, you're talking about these parents, and many of whom are going into debt. How do the academies sell it to the parents to get them on board?
Well, I'll give you a quick, just kind of briefer on what a hockey academy is, because maybe a lot of your listeners are just kind of almost shaking their head going, okay, what exactly is that? Well, it's essentially a prep school where part of the day you're either on the ice or off the ice, but doing hockey-specific training. So rather than go to an elective like art, music, or even gym class, well, that time is spent on the ice and spent training for hockey. So it's kind of like a prep school, but it's a prep school where hockey is definitely the number one kind of factor there. In a lot of cases, they're even located inside a hockey rink. So how do they sell that program? Well, there's two ways. One is, the easiest way is, well, Connor McDavid went to a hockey program or a hockey academy. Yeah. So you want your kid to possibly reach that next level. Well, look at the guys on the World Junior team. They went there. Hockey Canada endorses hockey academies, so that's another way. But the way that, I guess, parents rationalize it is, and I heard this from a lot of parents, is we're spending the money on the education now so that later on possibly he gets a scholarship or plays major junior, and post-secondary education is taken care of that way. So spend the money now so you don't have to spend it later, which is just such a dangerous, dangerous line of thinking when you think about it, because there's no guarantee that, A, they're going to make it to the next level. And all that does, I think, is just put added pressure on a child that probably already has enough on his plate already.
Is there an investment theory here too, Michael, in that first year that they're in, that it's hard to get them out because you spent the money, they're with their friends, they've maybe made some grounds in terms of their skill, their teachable skills on the ice, and that you can't pull them out after that first year? So maybe for the academies, getting the parents in the door and the kids in the door, hard to get, it's easy to get them in, or once you get them in, it's hard to get them out, basically.
Oh, 100%, and I think it starts off by you're playing AAA and you're going, okay, well, this is great, but if you're going to play AAA next year, well, you know you have to play summer hockey as well. Oh, okay. And they almost kind of $100 right. you to death is how one parent explained it to me, where it's like, okay, well, we're bringing in a skills coach. Well, okay, it's not mandatory, and yet it kind of is mandatory because the whole team is doing it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to play AAA hockey and you want to continue to develop, well, this is one of those costs that you just have to do. And it goes on and on and on. And like you mentioned, by year three, you're going, well, we've already been doing it for 2 years. To get out now and to really jeopardize his chances of developing as he should, well, we can't do that. So, yeah, you're basically, they've got you by then. And I think that's the difficult thing for parents is, how do you get out when you've already started down this kind of route? And it's a costly route. It's one that I think a lot of parents kind of also justify, in the sense that there's a huge social circle wrapped around it, where their friends are the kids' hockey friends' parents as well, and tournaments become your vacations as well. And a lot of parents are saying, well, we don't go to the Bahamas anymore, but now we go to London or to Buffalo for a hockey tournament, and that becomes our vacation. So, yeah, you know what? For the parents that can't afford it, I think it's great. They're introducing their kid to sports. And if they're going to the hockey academy, you've got a kid who obviously is driven and is getting maybe a better education because it's private school education. But for the parents that are kind of sacrificing retired savings and even education savings, I think it's just a foolish endeavor.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Michael Trakos. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media News. We're discussing his four-part article about the cost of hockey and youth hockey in Canada. Michael, you mentioned the education aspect of it. We know these players are getting a great hockey education. What about their actual real-world education? Are they getting the same sort of quality education you might get at a public school in Canada or a private school in Canada? Or is this just a sort of a hockey factory that's graduating blithering idiots when it comes to math and science and, you know, the real things you need in life?
Yeah, and I think that's up for debate. I think it definitely depends on the institution as well as the student. If you've got a kid who is just a quote-unquote jock who all he cares about is hockey and doesn't even care about school, well, whether he's in a public school system or whether he's in a private school system, that's probably not going to change a whole lot. And I talked to a couple of educators in terms of the type of curriculum that they're getting there and the type of students that are graduating out of there. And, you know, it's basically up for debate. I've heard some horror stories where kids that have won private school or, sorry, hockey academy, they're getting onto the next level and playing major junior, and coaches were complaining that they couldn't even read at a grade five level. And that obviously is concerning. And one hockey academy owner who just took over from a previous owner said that one parent had just assumed that he could continue paying for grades and making sure that his kid was basically being passed along with a solid average. And I'm sure that kind of stuff exists, and it exists not just at hockey academies, but other schools as well. So I think if you're a parent and you are going down this route, obviously you have to do your homework. You have to find out what school is best for your son, and you have to find a school, I guess, maybe the best ones are the ones that do withhold hockey if the grades aren't up to snuff, because at the end of the day, it's the education that they're supposedly there for.
Yeah, Michael, you have nothing to worry about. I read at a grade six level.
well, that's why you enjoy my articles so much.
No, but you know,
we have to read them to them.
You mentioned, Michael, that in the article, the amount of hockey academies across Canada and certainly in the U.S., everybody's very familiar with Shattuck St. Mary's, Jonathan Taves, Sidney Crosby went there, and then there's Notre Dame in Saskatchewan. You mentioned Okanagan Hockey Academy. There's many hockey academies. I think the high school that I went to actually is trying to bring a hockey academy. That's Kelvin High School. Even though the cost is astronomical and the chances of players going to the NHL and pro hockey are so low, is there any indication that these hockey academies and the growth of hockey academies are going to slow down?
No, and that's completely the purpose that we were doing these stories, is that in the last 5 years, they've almost doubled across Canada, more and more popping up daily. Since the article was published, I had a couple of educators reach out to me and say, hey, you've got to visit our school. We've got an academy opening up for next year. I'd love to get your opinion. I'd love to get some press. And it just seems like Hockey Canada has put their stamp of endorsement on it. And since then, which was, I want to say, like 10 or 12 years ago, since then, it's been really exploding across the country. And if you go out west, they have a whole league dedicated just to hockey academies. They have a huge tournament every year in BC where the top schools from not only Canada but also the U.S. Compete. In Ontario, it's a little bit slower, but a school that I visited, which was the Canadian International Hockey Academy, opened up 4 years ago. I talked to the guy in charge of the hockey program, and he said, you know what, we just got a kid, Gabe Vilardi, who was the second overall pick in the OHL entry draft. He's going to be a top five, maybe top 10 pick in the NHL 2 years from now. He goes, once that kid makes it, boom, we're set, basically. That's just going to entice even more kids to come to our school. And you know what? That's going to entice even more schools to open up, because these things, if you're charging $40,000 to $50,000 for, and you've got a lot of parents who are just so crazy about hockey, it just makes sense that, if anything, the trend is going to continue.
So, and I think part three of your four-part article, Michael, and then Cam Cole writes that fifth part, Matt Duchene's father estimates that his amount of money spent on Matt Duchene's career up to the point of making the National Hockey League was about $300,000, which I would say shocked me, but interestingly enough, I had a conversation with a hockey father whose kid went through these kind of programs, and he told me at the table, to my basically utter dismay, that he thought the budget for making an NHL, if you were paying from ground up with your child, was about $250,000. So the number is not actually very far off from the $300,000 that Matt Duchene's father had to pay for him. I mean, I can't even, and you note in the article, in the quotes, that he didn't have a more property, he didn't have any savings, everything was invested in Matt Duchene. I mean, there's a number of aspects of that. Why does a parent get so, why is a parent willing to do that? And then what are the psychological effects on the child if his kid, if he doesn't, which more likely than not, he won't make it?
Yeah, that's a really good question as to, like, why do parents do it? And I want to say just for the love of their child, and I've got two kids, and I know, like, whenever they ask, hey, can we play ball hockey in a league or gymnastics, and we're just talking about introductory stuff, we've never said no, even though sometimes we're kind of looking at, my wife and I are looking at each other going, geez, can we really afford to have them in dance and gymnastics and hockey this year? Because it's expensive, and it all adds up, and So I imagine he probably had the same conversations with his wife. And like we mentioned earlier, I think it's just a snowball effect where by year three, year four, and you've already spent this much money. And you know, let's face it, Matt Duchene was one of those child prodigies when he was younger. He was playing up a level. Mm-hmm. He was scoring like insane, like Gretzky-like points in the Halliburton hockey system to the point where his dad actually had to take him out and put him into another hockey league that was going to be a little bit more competitive. So I imagine he was kind of buoyed by the fact that, hey, my son is ridiculously good. But you know what? His story, like you mentioned, yeah, your friend, it's not unusual. We're not talking about just the Matt Duchene who are spending this much, or the Vince Duchene that are spending this much money. Mm-hmm. This goes for all kids, whether or not you are an American League level prospect, or if you're not even going to play hockey past high school. So the costs don't differentiate between the guys who are going to be NHLers and the guys who just fall short of that goal. And to answer your question, what does it do? I think it ends up, you've got a lot of kids who, if they don't have that fallback plan, are obviously going to be a little disappointed and a little sour. And I just don't know what the future prospects are for those kids.
Michael, you mentioned Wayne Gretzky. In part four of your article, you talk about how hockey is now a 12-month-a-year program. There's no off-season for most of these elite kids. Here's a quote that Wayne Gretzky gave to the National Post back in 2000. One of the worst things to happen to the game, in my opinion, has been year-round hockey, and in particular, mm-hmm. summer hockey. All it does for kids, as far as I can tell, is keep them out of sports they should be doing in the warmer weather, close quote. That's Wayne Gretzky, greatest hockey player of all time, yet people seem to be ignoring his opinion on this matter. Why isn't Gretzky's words being taken, you know, with more value than what we're seeing with, you know, 12-month-a-year hockey programs?
You know what? I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle there, Ezra. I think we're at the point now where even Wayne Gretzky didn't train like hockey players train today, and to say, okay, well, let's just go back to the days where you could play on the backyard rink or on the pond. You know, once the season's over, put your hockey equipment up in the attic and play another sport. Well, that's become sort of a myth right now. Hockey is so specialized where you try to find one player in the NHL that doesn't train year-round, that doesn't train as soon as the season is done, go to a summer, do summer training, play summer hockey. And if he doesn't, it's like a Phil Kessel where we laugh at him and go, what, you're on the ice for two times a year? Mm-hmm. What a joke. What a bum. So, you know, that philosophy has become part of the norm, not just in the NHL, but in all minor hockey now. So the idea that you could just take off your skates and not play hockey, well, do that. You might be a better athlete, as I got one guy quoted saying, but you're not going to be as good as the guy that you're playing hockey with come September. So I think that's the reality, is that you just can't go back and say, okay, well, we pine for the days where players were coming off the farm. They didn't have any money, but they were just talented players. You know what? It takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of specialization, and it takes a lot of money now, I think, to develop a hockey player.
You know, Michael, you talk about the parents' thoughts and the investment. It's possible they'll get a U.S. scholarship, and that's the equivalent of $35,000 to $40,000 a year. It's funny because while you know preparing for the interview, look at University of Manitoba tuition this year for 1 year is about $5,500 to $6,000 with books included for a full year at first year university one at University of Manitoba. So certainly the education you get there is likely no worse or really probably better than what you're getting there in the privatized and the cost down in the States for $35,000 to $40,000. So I guess my question on that is, why haven't the Canadian universities, like, why are they so overlooked? Why are they, like, that last stop before a player is kind of ending his hockey career after major junior or something like that? And why not work with the universities to build a hockey program similar to in the States and try and encourage more education?
I've always wondered that. And back even when I was going to school at Ryerson University, I always wondered why. And you'd hear stories about, like, basketball players and why our schools are just get – we don't have the same type of basketball, mm-hmm. obviously, talent because they're going to the NCAA. And the same thing with hockey. I think that your first stop is either you're playing major junior and, or you hope to get a college scholarship. But no one ever says, okay, I want to play CIS hockey. And you're right. Something is broken, I think, in our system when that is happening. And I don't have an answer for – why it continues to happen, only that it seems kind of foolish now.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. As part of the article, it's implicit in it that, you know, Hockey Canada is fully supportive of these, you know, hockey academies and of these year-round training programs and really making hockey a 12-month-a-year program for really the very, very wealthy. Is Hockey Canada, your mind, are they being a little bit derelict in their duty to looking at the entire spectrum of people that want to play hockey rather than focusing on the sort of elite brand of people who can afford these hockey academies and who can, you know, and who have the time and the commitment to make? Should Hockey Canada be taking more of a macro approach to encouraging hockey right across the country as opposed to these, you know, generating these hockey academies?
Tough to say because hockey participation is not going down. And yet whenever we lose at a major competition, i.e. the Olympics, World Cup, or World Juniors, all we do is navel gaze and say, why aren't we developing top-end, high-end elite athletes or elite players? So I think that's why a lot of times, or that's precisely why Hockey Canada decided to endorse hockey academies and decided to bring them into the school system, was the fact that Canada had lost at the Nagano Olympics. And it was the question, how do you develop better athletes? So you can't have both is the answer, I think. And if we want to be world leaders at the Olympics and the World Junior tournament, well, this is what you get. And the reality is it costs money to have top-end athletes.
Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for the Post Media Network. You can read this fantastic article, a series of articles, via the link we just sent out on our Twitter feed. Michael, great work. Always appreciate your time. And we'll get to the Jonathan Bernier save percentage next interview.
Okay, thanks again, guys. And really do appreciate all the promotion. I think it's a story that a lot of parents have to read.
I hope so, too. Take care, Michael. Happy holidays to you and yours.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
All right, thank you.
It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Michael Trakos for joining us to talk about his four-series article on the cost of hockey, youth hockey in Canada. Really interesting topic. Really interesting articles he composed. If you want to catch them, read them. They're on our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. This segment of the show, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, looking for something to do, Ivan Decker is in town. You can check him out. Two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 o'clock. If you're still looking for New Year's Eve plans, Rumors is your destination, rumorscomedyclub.com. And Dave Coulier tickets on sale as well. He's coming at the end of February. You know, I just don't think that it was a great article by Michael. Like, I can't say it enough. I don't think it's a topic that's being discussed enough, and I don't think that it's just going to continue to spiral out of control. And I think this is a problem, and that everybody's sort of burying their heads in the sand about it, because there's a lot of people, a lot of families who, you know, have some, you know, who might be confused about their skill set of their child. And they might be putting good money after bad in the hopes of, you know, chasing a dream that comes to so very few. And I mean, like you said, Richard, you know, Matt Duchesne's dad says he spent $300,000. You were having the conversation with, you know, somebody else who says they expect to spend $250,000 on youth sports.
Well, that's what they estimated the cost was to make the NHL.
Okay, so pardon me for I mean, these numbers are astronomical, and they're higher than in any other sport of the Big Four, just because hockey is the most expensive of the Big Four sports. And I do think that Hockey Canada should do more to try and rein in the costs. I don't know what they can do necessarily, but I think that they should have a campaign saying you don't need the one-piece composite stick for $300 at a time. You don't need it when you're 8-10 years old. And yet, it just seems like like Michael said, that the genie's out of the bottle on this issue, and it's just going to continue to get more and more and more and more expensive. You guys know it better than I do. You coached, youth hockey. You guys saw what the parents were spending on sticks and on equipment and the arms race that was involved there.
Hockey is an expensive sport, and it has been for a long time. And when you look at some of the information in Michael Tracos's articles, and he did do an excellent job. It was a great interview. You have to, I guess, look at it as Canada produces the best hockey players, but with our obsession with our children. I don't have children right now. Maybe I will one day, but the obsession with making it to the NHL and the amount of money that you're prepared to spend, it's gotten out of control, and it just continues to get more and more out of control. And it's great that we produce the best hockey players in the world, and Canada's won the gold medal at the last two Olympics, and we're defending gold medalists at the World Junior Championships, and we're at the very least usually second, third, or fourth in all of these major tournaments. But it's at a cost, right? When you think about that, $300,000 over the course of, let's say, 10 to 15 years, I mean, it's really ridiculous. It's becoming an elite sport. And, you know, there are some great grassroots programs, that make it available for young hockey players, hockey that is. And the question becomes, do you have to spend tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars if you want that high quality of hockey where you're at that elite level? And it is trending towards that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is ridiculous, and it has become an elite sport. And you can still put your kid in hockey, you know, for $400 or $500 a year. You don't have to spend the amount of money, Drew, on composite mm-hmm. sticks. You don't have to put your kids in summer hockey. As Gret said, he doesn't think you should be playing hockey all year round. You should be playing baseball, soccer, golf, whatever it is. But certainly there are many parents out there that see Connor McDavid and the fact that he went to Hockey Academy, or the fact that Sidney Crosby went to Shattuck St. Mary's, and they say, well, if you want to strive to be the best, we have to pay that amount of money. To be the best, you got to spend that astronomical amount of money. So it is a little bit mind-boggling sometimes when you consider how much money is spent to get your kids to an elite level.
Yeah, it starts with the parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where it starts with. I mean, the kids aren't working part-time to by the time they're working, and their career's either been determined to be have a chance of making it or not.
Sure.
So it's on the parents to make those decisions, and there's going to be a skewed, vision in terms of whether or not you think they can make it, and the odds are very difficult. And, I think this is something that's likely happening in all other sports as well. Like, let's be certain about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure it's basketball, and the academies are basketball. You see, sure. In the States, there's a ton of these academies, at Oak Hill and all those stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's not just exclusive to hockey, but basketball is far cheaper than hockey to play.
And that's really where it comes to. I mean, to play basketball, you need a ball and you need a pair of sneakers.
That's right.
Whereas with hockey
and baseball, the same.
And baseball, you need a glove and
a ball and a bat.
That's right. And soccer, you need nothing. Football would be expensive with the equipment, but I think a lot of that.
But it's not the ice time. I mean, it's a
that's
field.
Right. It's a field.
You find a green field.
That's right. Something worth watching. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL with our news and notes segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 25 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you for the next 25 minutes to the top of the hour. It's time for our look around the NHL with NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
An honest-to-goodness trade in the NHL this week. I didn't know these things were allowed.
I know.
It's amazing to think that, what is this, December, and we finally got a legitimate NHL trade.
Yep.
The Pittsburgh Penguins acquire Trevor Daley from the Chicago Blackhawks in exchange for defenseman Rob Scuderi. Two defensemen who hadn't been working out with their respective teams swapped for one another. you know, your thoughts about the trade. Is this sort of a logical trade for both sides?
Well, I mean, yeah. It's always tough with logical now when you're dealing with kind of Pittsburgh and just the inconsistencies there, you know, sending Daniel Sprong down today, and which have been done before today. But overall, I think the deal makes sense to me. Pittsburgh needs puck-moving defensemen, and certainly Daly is that more so than Scuderi is. Mm-hmm. Scuderi is a stay-at-home guy, block shots, play kind of a safe game. Trevor Daly, you know, I don't love Trevor Daly, but he can skate and he can shoot and he can push the pace a bit. And, you know, you're talking about players. He's a little younger than Scuderi is, of course, and, you know, the cap hits are pretty reasonably similar. So they're basically the same. So I don't really see it as a problem trade. I understand
Pittsburgh retained some of the money on Scuderi there. So
yeah,
giving the Blackhawks,
because of the cap, because of the cap round. That's really the only reason. I mean, Trevor Daly comes into Chicago, I thought it'd work out better than it did. Joel Quenneville didn't like him. Trevor Daly didn't have confidence. If you watch Chicago play, which I did, he just didn't play a confident game. He was, you know, making poor decisions. And decision-making isn't his strong suit necessarily, but he just looked like he was playing without any confidence of the coaching staff, kind of relegated to that bottom pairing for a while. And so they're able to create cap space by bringing in Scuderi. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I like it from Pittsburgh's perspective because you're able to trade a guy who doesn't really have much value to you, and then you're able to add in a puck-moving defenseman, you know, who can push the pace and who can shoot and move the puck. Not the best, but certainly I think better and for what you need. Compliments. Granted, they haven't been playing well at all since the coaching change, but compliments the back end there.
Ezzy, the Blackhawks lose Marcus Kruger for 4 months after he has surgery to repair a dislocation of his left wrist. How significant of a loss is it for the Blackhawks to lose Kruger, a guy who's sort of a key component of on their bottom lines there?
Yeah, and it was difficult towards the beginning of the season when they didn't have enough money to sign him, if you remember that. But yeah, he's a pretty underrated player, fourth line center, and it's going to be significant. That means they're going to have to call someone up from the AHL most likely. I'm not sure who it is, but the Blackhawks have certainly struggled over the years up the middle, but it really hasn't hurt them. And Artem Anisimov is now their second line center there. He's been playing with Patrick Kane and Artemi Panarin. But when you lose one of those depth guys, I mean, it's tough to see. And, you know, he'll probably be back before the playoffs start when they'll really need him. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be opportunity for another player. But it's certainly not going to affect the Chicago Blackhawks as much as it would if, you know, a Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Marian Hossa goes down. They've got a lot of depth on the team, but he's certainly, as you mentioned, a key part of the fourth line of the Hawks.
Yeah, they called up Philip Deneau, their first-round pick from 2011, to take Kruger's spot there. You know, just something, you know, he's sort of one of those unsung heroes for the Chicago Blackhawks. And they know how valuable he is, you know, in the efforts they went through to try and fit him into their salary cap.
Well, those players drew like Kruger and Shaw and Bickle. Yes. And, I mean, those players matter, especially when you're getting into the late stages of a season.
Yeah. The Arizona Coyotes, they lose goaltender Mike Smith for 8 to 10 weeks with a core injury. He has surgery on it. Anders Lindback is now their starting goaltender. He gives up 7 goals in
their toast.
Yeah.
They're likely toast. I don't know anything about their new backup. Is it Louis Dominguez?
Yeah, Dominguez, I believe, is...
It's a Deming. Whatever Deming. It is, I don't know anything about him. Unless he's a savior, I know Lindback. Well, I'm pretty sure Lindback isn't. So that might be it for the Coyotes. In long term, that's probably the best thing for them.
Yeah, there's some talk that Don Maloney would be interested in acquiring a goaltender.
You don't want to, again, we said it last week.
You don't
want
to waste an asset.
Well, you don't want to let the fact that you're playing in a terrible division skew your long-term goals.
No, but I mean, you know, really with Lindback in net, and we've seen for the last couple of years, no team has been competitive with him in net. I mean, he's been that bad.
Yes,
going back to going back to when he was with Tampa Bay, he was bad. Going back to when he was with Dallas last year, he was bad. And he's been terrible so far with Arizona this year as well. Marc-Andre Fleury back to Pittsburgh. Marc-Andre Fleury, he's out 2 weeks with a concussion. Bo Bennett, he's out 4 to 6 weeks with an upper body injury. It's hard to believe, but it seems like it's becoming somewhat of a lost season for Pittsburgh already. It's just, you know, they make the move to get rid of Mike Sullivan. Pardon me, to get rid of Mike Johnson. Johnson, yeah. Hire Mike Sullivan. They lose their first 3 games under Sullivan. They can't score still. It's just, I mean, it's amazing what you're doing with the primes of Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, and they're still obviously treading water in the playoff race right now, but certainly when your other alternative in goal is certainly not as good as Marc-Andre Fleury, and you're talking about Bo Bennett, who has had tons of injury problems in his first 3 years in the league. But, hey, if Sidney Crosby starts playing like we expect him to and Phil Kessel gets going again, he's had some inconsistent spurts to this season. I still think Pittsburgh is a playoff team. I don't know how far they end up going in the playoffs, but certainly, Drew, they haven't been lighting it up this year, and the coaching change was not a surprise to any of us, and the Trevor Daley trade made sense. They need more offense from the back end, but certainly those injuries are going to be significant, and Marc-Andre Fleury has probably been one of the bright spots for this team this year, and Daniel Sprong was sent down to the AHL. He hasn't had his best rookie season. It was a surprise that he made the team, actually, but I mean, there are some issues there. I wouldn't be surprised if the Pittsburgh Penguins make another trade, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was before the trade deadline.
Want to make note that Dickie Moore, Hockey Hall of Famer, obviously spent the majority of his 14-year career in the NHL, passed away earlier today at the age of 84, finished his career with the St. Louis Blues, but wanted to just mention that Dickie Moore, you know, our condolences go out to his family. Another one of those, you know, a player on the Montreal Canadiens teams that, you know, might sort of get lost a little bit in the shuffle given the fantastic teams he was on. But this is another guy who was a Hockey Hall of Famer, so we want to make note of his passing and send our condolences to the entire Moore family on the passing of Dickie Moore. To head to break, when we come back, we're going to do sort of a year in review of 2015 in the hockey world. This will be our final Saturday show before the new year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final Saturday segment for the year 2015. We'll be on this coming Wednesday, the 23rd. Then we're going to take the week off. We'll return Saturday, January 2nd, 2016. It's amazing to say already. That'll be a 3 p.m. start to the show as the Jets will be in San Jose that night to play the Sharks. Of course, a 9 o'clock start for that game. Drew Mindell, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. Sort of a year in review segment as we look back at 2015 in the hockey world. What jumps out to you guys the most? Is there one sort of defining moment or defining storyline to 2015 that you think is going to reverberate into 2016 and going forward?
Well, the one thing I would say, Drew, would be that the Chicago Blackhawks won the cup and had a dynasty. I think it was anointed, and I think rightfully so, a dynasty in an era where basically every team is the same, save for 5 to 6 teams.
Mm-hmm. When dynasty shouldn't occur.
Yeah, that was the most impressive. That stood out to me the most as maybe that one storyline. Overall, that's what I would say. There are others we'll touch on, but that was one for me.
Ezzy, what about you? What jumps out at you when you're going to look back on 2015 as a hockey season?
Yeah, I'm probably going to agree with Rich. It's the Chicago Blackhawks winning their third cup in 6 years. And certainly the surprise of the Ottawa Senators and the Minnesota Wild making the playoffs and the emergence of some goaltenders that we didn't expect to have those types of seasons. Speaking of Devan Dubnyk and Andrew Hammond, the big story, though, going back was the Chicago Blackhawks. And I mean, they were a treat to watch in the playoffs. Duncan Keith winning the Conn Smythe, you know, as someone who kind of pulls for the defensemen more so than the forwards, I really enjoyed watching Duncan Keith, kind of the best performance by a defenseman, I thought, since Scotty Niedermeyer in 2003 when the Devils won the Cup. But certainly many teams taking a step back was a big storyline for 2014-15. The LA Kings missing the playoffs after winning the Cup, Dallas not making the playoffs. I think the Boston Bruins as well, not making the playoffs was certainly not seen by many people. So, but I mean, as far as the NHL expansion, and you know, we should mention too, you know, the lack of goal scoring with Jamie Benn winning the scoring race with 87 points. I think that was a bit of an aberration. And if you look at what Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn and Patrick Kane are doing this year, we might have a player that cracks the 120 point barrier. So to me, that wasn't as big of a kind of skid mark on the season as many people thought it was going to be. But certainly the Chicago Blackhawks, and whether you want to call them a dynasty or not, they were certainly one of the biggest storylines of the year.
You know, one other one, maybe you could have done this at the end of 2014. My other one would have been the aura and the, I don't know, how Hockey Night in Canada is essentially just any other game and night now. That one, to me, a whole season of it, really seeing the way it's morphed, to me is something I don't think kids now will feel the same way on a Saturday night that we feel.
I don't disagree. I mean, are you surprised that we sort of felt Saturday night the same way? I guess in our formative youth, hockey wasn't on as much as it is now. And I think that's a function not so much of, you know, of the broadcast itself. It's just a function of there's games on every single night.
No,
so
I think it's
You both. Think it's a broadcast,
I
too?
I think it's both, yeah. Okay. I think when you put 10 games on at once.
Something which, yeah.
It's like Monday Night Football doesn't have 10 games on at once. Or Sunday Night Football now really is that big thing. There's no four. That's not five games on at once.
More is not always the way. Is not always
two
better.
Or three games, not 10 on 10 difference. You get one game. You create a discussion and a something to work towards if you have 10 people who've watched 10 different games.
Well, as a Vikings fan, which I am, you're a Niners fan. I'm a Vikings fan. When the Giants, I was cheering for the Giants to win on Monday against the Dolphins because that meant the Vikings were going to be on Sunday Night Football against the Giants next Sunday. I mean, that's the marquee game.
Right.
Something to look forward to. I mean, that, you know, and I do look forward to Sunday Night Football in that manner, which is, I think, a fair point.
So that just to me is that, yeah, that's been, there's no presence anymore.
You think that we're going to look back at 2015 as maybe the end of the Sidney Crosby era?
No, too early.
Still too early in your
too
mind?
Early, too early, Drew. You can't, I wouldn't say that. You might be right, but I wouldn't say that.
Okay. Is he long? Is he always going to be a Pittsburgh Penguin?
I wouldn't say that either. Certainly with no assurances. Ownership will be a big factor there in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. But it's a fair question.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to be an underrated storyline, I think, of 2015, looking back, is the bungling of the year for Sidney Crosby, almost 2 years now, maybe three or four years,
yeah.
And the relationship and the dynamic that it's going to play out, you know, involving his long-term future in Pittsburgh. I think we might look back at that, you know, this year sort of being the, you know, a couple years before, you know, bad seasons or whatever, you know, not getting to the Stanley Cup Finals as he had at the beginning of the 2010, 2011, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, just, I mean, he's an afterthought. I mean, Sidney Crosby is an afterthought in the NHL right now. Or the only thought that comes to mind about Sidney Crosby is, why is he an afterthought?
I know they're older. I know they're he's a little bit older now, but 2-3 years ago, weren't we wondering about Alexander Ovechkin?
Fair point.
So
completely fair point.
I'm not willing to write off a competitor and a guy as talented as he is.
Well, I think it's a possibility. I'm not saying that it's going to be, you know, a sure thing that's going to factor in. What about it? Is there anything else that sort of, you know, comes to mind about 2015 in the hockey world? You know, anything maybe on the international hockey front or just it was sort of just a middling year in the NHL.
Well, it's a non-Olympic year.
Yeah,
I mean that plays a factor in terms of. Of you know how you feel about the year. Now, of course, there's the World Juniors and winning, but for the every year tournaments, they have a little bit different significance than does the every 4 year tournament.
Yeah, it was a non-Olympic year, so as far as the senior level, there maybe wasn't as much interest. You had Canada winning the World Junior Hockey Championship, of course, and after struggling for many years, I think it was the first gold since 2009, and the big news. The big news was the World Cup of Hockey being officially announced, and you know this show we weren't that happy with the format. So I mean I'm still a fan of international hockey, but I guess it was a bit of a quiet year on that front.
And you know you talked about the World Juniors, and I think that kind of ties in with Hockey Canada and the conversation we had earlier with Mike Latrakos. They dropped the World Juniors right into Toronto, Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Cash.
Yeah.
That's all that means.
Sure.
Because it's a little bit more of a grassroots tournament, right? Kind of like brought The Hockey pulsed back to Winnipeg after the Jets had left in 99. Like, why is it not being dropped into other cities where, you know, and that's just, so that kind of, to me, that it took away from the significance of the tournament last year.
The tournament I still remember the most. I mean, besides the one here in Winnipeg, obviously. But, I mean, in terms of, you know, John Slaney was at 91.
You remember that?
In Red Deer. I can still remember it. I vividly remember his shot from the point. The crease, I don't know who the goaltender was, but the crease was yellow. So, I mean, that's, you know, going back to, you know, in the days when the crease was something other than blue. I can vividly remember it, you know, and it just, when the tournament's in a bigger city like Toronto or Montreal, it doesn't have the same impact. And that's just, like you said, it's a cash grab for Hockey Canada wanting to make the most money on it as possible. No.
So I remember that. I mean, that's significant as well. Does that change the direction of the tournament and what it ends up being? I don't know.
Like the future of the tournament? I mean,
yeah, it just changed the way I watched it. And, you know, the ticket prices were very expensive. Mm-hmm. So,
I always find the tournament interesting when it's overseas in Europe. You know, it'll be in Finland coming up, of course, starting on Boxing Day with Canada and the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's a completely different tournament when it's overseas. Because it just doesn't have the same cultural resonance that it does here in Canada. I mean, there's a reason why the tournament is all, when it's in the States even, it's always on a border town. It's because they rely on the Canadians to fill it up. It's a reason why, you know, who are the finalists? Buffalo, St. Louis, and Pittsburgh or something? And it's going back to Buffalo. I mean, you might as well just put it in Toronto again.
Yes, I agree with that. I don't think the growth of the tournament is best served by that. I know they're building a bunch of new facilities there, but I do agree, Drew, get into different areas.
Yeah.
Try and promote the product. The game is better off when every country is as invested in it as you are.
That's right. Looking ahead 2016, you know, it's obviously, you know, you go into your crystal ball, gaze into the future. What's the storyline of 2016? Is it Steven Stamkos and his future?
Steven Stamkos is certainly one of them. It's, does the NHL decide to expand? I think that's a question that needs to be asked. You know, how hard are they on changing the goaltender's equipment? That's something that's going to be very interesting. How well received or poorly received will the World Cup be? There's many storylines, no doubt about it.
But you're anticipating a better year in hockey for 2016 than 2015 was? We spent a lot of time on this show talking about the 2014-15 NHL season, how it was sort of a lousy season. It seems like the hockey and the premier players have been better so far this year.
Yeah, and the 3-on-3 has been a little more of a welcome addition. So, yeah, that's fair to say. I mean, the parity's more than ever, but the games themselves have been a little better quality, maybe.
Yeah. Want to give you a score update. The Calgary Flames losing to the St. Louis Blues. They make it close in the end. They were down 3-0. They make it close. They lose 3-2 to the St. Louis Blues. So a division rival for the Jets gets two more points.
It's two before 6 o'clock here.
That's right. The Blackhawks winning in the shootout against Buffalo. So, you know, as is always the case with the Central Division, you just don't get any, you can't get a leg up no matter how hard you try to make some room, to make some advancements. That's why the Jets need to continue to win. Let's wrap it up with cheers and jeers. Okay, there we go.
Congratulations.
Chris was cutting us off nice and early.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock, I'll start with you.
Well, I'm going to jeer the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, you're going to Daniel Sprong. I don't know a lot about Daniel Sprong, but you look at the way the roster is constructed. Do you have an overall vision? Like, why are you making moves every day that are inconsistent with one day and the other? And Daniel Sprong, you bring him up. You're kind of doing what the Buffalo did with Grigorenko.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew you were doing it. How did you not know? And then you end up sending him down to
Charlottetown. Charlottetown.
To Charlottetown today. Just odd. It's an odd move. Now, again, there's two different markers. It's a 10-game and the 40-game. But still, big picture, didn't make any sense.
Right. As a cheer or jeer?
I'm going to cheer Thorbs for setting the franchise record for games played. It was a special night for him. There was a nice video tribute to him last night at the MTS Center, so he gets my cheer today.
Well said. I will echo that was going to be my cheer, so I'll echo that as well and say congratulations to Chris Thorburn on that accomplishment for the Atlanta Thrashers / Winnipeg Jets franchise. That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Michael Trakos, Aaron Portsline, and Dave Jamieson for joining us. In case you missed any of those interviews, they'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, and Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.